everyone, and welcome to Better Done Than Perfect, a podcast for SaaS founders and product people. Today, our awesome guest is Mark Thomas, Head of Growth at Powered by Search, an agency that works with SaaS companies, B2B SaaS, and we're going to talk about positioning today. This show is brought to you by UserList, the best way for SaaS founders to send onboarding emails, segment your users based on events, and see where your customers get stuck in the product. Start your free trial today at userlist.com. Hey, Mark.
Hey, how's it going?
We're doing great. So thrilled to bring this topic to the table today. It's right. Like never-ending war for us SaaS companies.
Yeah.
Before we get started, could you tell us a bit more about yourself, what you did before joining Powered by Search, and what you do now?
Sure. I actually started as a journalist, a magazine journalist, and I got into startups because of working with clients on like communications products. I started a SaaS company. It was a real-time survey tool, so kind of like live voting and stuff like that. That was back in 2015. I ran that company up until 2020, when I was pretty burned out, honestly. And I thought now was a good time to change, because in 2018, I had put into place a system for growth. I had a big impact on the company. We were getting a lot of revenue from low or no touch clients, our customers. And I was pretty confident that the company would do well. And I thought, now's a good time to move on. So that's why I joined Powered by Search, to work with a whole bunch of different clients in different contexts. We only work with mid to late stage companies as well. So it's a whole different ball game from the early stage companies that I had been in, and very exciting, very interesting challenges to overcome there as well. So
you are Head of Growth at Powered by Search. Do you help them grow, or do you help your clients grow? Who is the ultimate benefactor there?
Yeah, well, you know what? Growth is one of those things where it's pretty all around for many organizations. But my specific role at Powered by Search is probably half-half. Half of the time I work on growing the agency, getting leads that are qualified. And then the other half of the time I work with clients on positioning, messaging, and getting them ready to work with SEO and PPC teams.
Positioning is a really fascinating topic, and you're right. It's exactly, you should get it first, right, before doing anything else, before pumping money in your content or in PPC or anything. So in your own words, what is positioning, and what is good positioning for SaaS?
So yeah, I think that's interesting. The thing about positioning is that most people have a fairly abstract idea about what that means. Now, positioning, all it is you having a clear concept and being able to articulate to somebody, even if it's just to yourself, how you are seen within the total market of all of your competitors in relation to the way that you solve the acute pain points of your specific customers differently to your competitors. That is all positioning is. How do you solve your customers' pain points differently to your competitors?
I think it's a bit like, a logo mark is just a little logo, and a positioning is just a little statement. But what kind of work, like tons of work, goes into defining what that little statement is? What is the process? And one name that comes to mind is April Dunford. We've interviewed her before, and we did a blog post when we did a positioning exercise at UserList a couple of years ago, which is still doing great for SEO. Yes. But what framework do you use for your clients when you're settling on the journey?
Yeah, we actually work through a very simple process. So most companies will go through a huge lengthy process. For example, I worked with someone not long ago who delivered a 100-page document to their customer about the positioning. And I read it and I was like, I have literally no idea what this company is trying to be positioned as. On the other hand, we delivered a single page. And their positioning statement, as you pointed out earlier, that was probably no more than about 30 words. So you can make positioning hard and kind of ethereal or philosophical if you want to. Sure, go ahead. However, most companies aren't trying to kind of position a whole suite of products across multinational, territories, those kind of things. And really, a simple process of getting some clarity and alignment from your team and getting on with it will be enough for you, especially if you're an early stage SaaS. Here, Powered by Search, we built a system where we go through a 7-step process of how to position a company. And it usually takes 90 minutes on a phone call with a group of people from the organization. So we usually try to get the CEO. We try and get like a CMO, if there is one. We'll get like customer success people. We'll get sales people and some marketers potentially. Basically, anyone who has contact with the customer or experience trying to communicate with the customer. We want like 6-7 people max on that call. It takes 90 minutes. We work through a process and then we go away and turn it into a clearer report, and you've got a positioning statement. That's how we work.
Sounds like a surgical operation when you're like, you know what you're doing. So what are those steps?
We'll
secret?
Put you under anesthetic and you can come out and have lunch as normal. No, it's not a secret. In fact, we actually published the entire system together with the tool for free on our website. It's called SaaS Positioning Canvas. If you want to run through it yourself, so it's easy. Basically, you just go to Google, type SaaS Positioning Canvas Powered by Search in, and it's right there at the top. Look, I can walk you through the steps. Would that be helpful?
All right. Absolutely, let's do it.
I'm going to list off the 7 steps. So this is in an A4 sheet of paper. I think A4 is an international term. I'd never thought about it until now, but it's a single sheet of printer paper. And here are the steps. Okay, so first of all, you want to talk about your customer's desire. So this is fears, frustrations, wants, aspirations. Okay, we can go into each of these steps in a second as well. Then you want to talk about the promise. So what is the promise that all of your competitors make to your target customer? Then the premise. So I explain the premise as the joke that you would tell at a party of your ideal customers if you wanted to fit in. Something that's so universally accepted by your market as a belief that people will instantly get it. Then we talk about difference chunking, which is a really weird term, but it basically says, okay, well, look, how do you solve this problem in a way that is unique? And there are 5 ways that you can do that. We'll talk about that in a second. Then market intimacy. So market intimacy is, what have you done to help your customers solve their problems in a way that's unique to you? The positioning statement is step 6, actually. So that is a simple statement, not copywriting, not getting into the minutiae, which basically summarizes all of the boxes before that. And then step 7 is the alternative. So what would happen to your customer if they continued to do nothing about their problems or try to solve them how they have been? And by the time we get to the end of that, most people are like, yeah, got it. Okay, this is how we're positioned. And that's the process.
I don't believe in simple solutions like this. So we do need examples. Please bring them on.
All right. Okay, cool. Well, look, how about I walk through each one of those steps and I kind of tell you what's involved. Would that be useful?
Absolutely. And okay. We would love like a sample company, maybe one of your clients that you could mention possibly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or like, cool. Let's do it for Gmail or something, if it's not possible.
Yeah, absolutely. I can definitely do that. So obviously, every company is unique. And because our clients are our clients, I've got to anonymize this. So I'll walk you through an example here of a company in the wealth management sector. All right. So wealth management is a massive industry. And particularly in the US, where a lot of people are talking about estate planning and stuff like that, wealth management is a big thing. There's firms of all different kinds of sizes. And our client makes a tool which helps them manage their business, right? So that's, I'll use that as an example, but I can give you some additional ones potentially as well. So look, we start with a desire. Okay, so target customer, we start by looking at, okay, what does your target customer look like? Now, most people, when they do this, they say, look, we sell to product marketers who have a specific problem, right? That's not your target customer, because look how different this is when we ended up with it. So for this client, we had your target customer is wealth management firms in the US with $25 to $500 million assets under management for wealth management, usually between small to medium size with approximately 10 people working there. They're interested in growing revenue, adding new clients, and delivering a better client experience, right? Then we move on to talk about some of the kind of the job titles, but very briefly, that's a paragraph. Basically, what job titles there are the people who use your product daily. Now, most people, when they position a company, they don't think about the user, they think about the buyer. The reality is you should generally think about the user. You want to speak to the buyer as well, but you should be positioning for the problems of the daily user, the person who's going to be using this problem, using this product all the time. So that's how we kind of think about this. From there, we'll think about what's missing in their current process or tool set. So like in a product like this, many people are managing different processes just on paper, and they are, you know, wanting to get that stuff online so that they can all work on it and collaborate on that kind of stuff, so that they've got records of their customers, so that they can not have things fall through the cracks, so that they can share reports with customers, right? So it's like what's currently missing in their process because they're using paper is X, Y, and Z. That's the start. Then we'll ask, like, okay, let's say this problem is a real problem. How much is not fixing the problem actually costing them? So for our client, the most significant cost impacts might come from not being able to scale efficiently, right? So not scaling fast enough would mean that you can't hire the people that you should be hiring. And that means that you're slowing your growth. And it all comes down to these kind of really acute pain points. And then you've got the expression of the pain points there as well. And then finally, in this kind of desire section, we'd ask, like, okay, well, look, why can't they fix this themselves? Anyone can build a product. Why haven't they done this? Why haven't they solved their problem already? Because often that thing is what SaaS companies don't think about. Like, why aren't our customers currently buying this product to solve their thing, right? To solve their problem. And it just turns out that a lot of these people are just too busy to think about how to actually solve the problem. They're so busy actually trying to get the outcome that they don't even think about the fact that there might be a way to solve the problem in the first place. So that's an example of how we think about the desire of a customer. Who are they? What are they doing that is inefficient? Why haven't they fixed it? And how much is it costing them? You want me to just talk about the promise?
I'm curious, when these things, they take shape of a canvas and you're like, let's answer those five questions. But it seems that that group of six people is supposed to know those answers, like, for sure. While if those problems that you solve, especially if it's like complex B2B software, which, like, for example, I represent UserList, and we are like solving multiple pain points. And depending on which pain point you choose, you can be classified as different market categories easily. So like these kind of simple quote unquote questions, they're not simple at all, and they really require certain like focus.
Yeah, well, look, that's totally true, which is why you hire experts to do it for you, right? But look, the way that, let's just divert onto your kind of specific thing there. So if I'm understanding you correctly, like UserList might have several different markets who you could actually sell to, several different job functions that you could sell to, and the problems for each are very different, right? Is that a summary there?
I think we made it easy for ourselves, at least at that aspect that we are only serving SaaS. So that is like the only thing that's truly set in stone. Okay. Everything else, yes, you can use it for customer success manually. You can use it for customer success automation. You can use it for email marketing. You can use it for user onboarding. These are all different names and different categories. Yeah.
The thing that you should do here is, okay, well, look, which breakdown, which customers are most likely to buy for what things? Another company that I helped position was trying to serve law firms. Now, the law firms were of different sizes, which is a common thing, right? So you've got everyone from a firm of one to a firm of 250 plus lawyers. Their needs are extremely different. The pain points they solve are extremely different. And in fact, the buyers within those things are extremely different. So taking that example, because I can give you some kind of data around it, what we ended up doing was we built a table in a spreadsheet as a research task versus just kind of in the exercise, because obviously that takes a minute of research. But we categorized each one of those firms by pain points, then a number of kind of financial metrics and also satisfaction metrics or engagement metrics. So you might have totable addressable market, current market penetration of that market. So how much of that market do you currently serve? You would have LTV for each one of those customers. And it's going to be the same for user list, right? Because at the end of the day, you know, like let's say you're talking to product managers, or you're talking to lifecycle marketers, or you're talking to demand gen people, each one of those customers is using your product for a different thing to solve a different problem. And there's also a different number of them. And the amount of time that each one of those people is going to use the product for is different. So ultimately, your lifetime value is different for each one of them, or average revenue per account as well. Now, take all of those things and then work out what the total opportunity is for each of them in terms of literal money. Then also ask yourself these questions, because in that example of the law firms that I just gave you, what we found was the huge market. There was over $1 billion more of the smallest firms in terms of totable addressable remaining market. That was actually one that we canceled off right away, even though there was $1 billion more, because the economics of acquisition for those companies would just be totally inefficient for actually growing our client. Like, you could spend so little money acquiring that $1 billion that it would just be not possible. And that might be the same thing for any other company. You may have a client who like looks financially attractive, but when you really drill in and you say, well, look, they have terrible NPS scores. This product is not for them, even though the economics here look pretty good. So it's going to be a total nightmare to grow. You want to do the same thing. Now, you might do this as a preparatory exercise, by the way, to coming into a positioning exercise. You need to work out, okay, what's the best market for us to pursue? You shouldn't pursue multiple markets, in my opinion, especially as an early stage startup. Focus on one thing.
Let's imagine there are a couple functions that the product can perform. And one is, for example, for the customer success department, and another is for marketing, let's say. And both are relatively close to the money. First, which one shall we pick? And second, shouldn't we just say that we're like all types of SaaS email in one place? There is a ton of tools like that just they're all in one is the selling point.
Mm-hmm. Can you just give me an example of one of them?
Oh, Intercom comes to mind, like is the most famous generalist.
Yeah.
Basecamp used to be one of those when you have, you know, calendar, project management all in one tool.
Well, look, my question to you, Jane, and I mean this with total respect, is like, how big are they in comparison to you?
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah.
You mean only large companies deserve to be generalists? Sort of.
I don't mean they deserve to be. It's not about that.
Can afford to be generalists.
The reality is, yeah, if you if you can afford to spend a lot of money to acquire a lot of money, you're much more likely to throw money at the wall and see what sticks. Mm-hmm. And if you look at Intercom are frequently changing their messaging, right? They're an all-in-one tool one day, they're a customer support desk the next, they're every couple
you're
months, right?
Right?
what they're doing there, Jane, is they're repositioning themselves frequently.
Why?
Because they've gone after the all-in-one thing. And ultimately, at the end of the day, they've got a heap of cash, right? They're probably sitting on so much VC money that they're just like, guys, we got to grow the heck out of this thing. Who do we go after today? Or who do we go after this next year or quarter three or whatever? That the reality is it's not the same game that you're playing. You're an early stage startup. And many of the listeners to this show are early stage startups. Now, unfortunately, we end up, and I've been in the same position, effectively looking at the success stories who are so far ahead of us that we lose sight of where we are and the fact that we are not dominating a single market well. So we think we must be doing it wrong. So we'll go after all of the markets because, you know, a rising tide floats all ships, right? Unfortunately, that isn't the case. And you end up with weak positioning that's undifferentiated and your customers go off and buy the big name anyway. It's sad because it feels like you're being bullied. But, but unfortunately, you know, economics tends to rule the world. You know, I'm not a neoliberal or anything, but that is the case. You know, the market decides and I hate it. And I wish we could be generalists. The reality is for marketing, particularly positioning, early days, you have to pick a horse and go after that. I don't know if I've mixed my metaphors there a little bit.
Let's have a glimpse of other steps in your canvas, because we've really, like, I think we've answered a lot of hard questions already by just, you know.
Cool.
diving well, you know in deep on question number one. There's still so much work to do.
Oh man, you know what I say to all of our clients? So these sessions take 90 minutes. I say this first step is going to take 50 minutes. The rest of them will feel like we're breezing through. So the promise, so super simple, because it's almost the same for every industry in my experience. The promise is what the most common promise your competitors make to prospects. I literally ask for one or two words here every time. So, I'll give you all of the classics. Simple, easy to use, cheap, efficient, cheaper, more productive, connected, better optimized, more efficient. I think I might have said that one already. But look, your competitors haven't put as much thought into this as you, most likely, because you're a good marketer, right? So they're making the common promises. Now, some of those promises might be important to your prospects. I can't deny that. But I do not think that you should just go off and play the same game as all of your competitors, because they're all going for the same business as you. But there is a customer who you serve really well, and that's what we try and drill down on in the desire, who cares specifically about the way that you do this. So you want to make a note of the promise, okay? And the kind of the words that we use to say that. Do you have any questions about that, or should I move on to the premise?
So do we want to put down common promises, or do we want to find ours there?
Yeah, you want to find the common promises that your competitors make. You don't think about yourself at all at this
point. Okay, great. Let's move on.
So you want to know about Intercom. You want to know about, like, I don't know, whatever other things are out there that solve the problems that you do. Mm-hmm. The premise, oh, by the way, all-in-one is a classic promise, by the way, and it's a terrible position to take. so there you go. The premise is the next one. Now, the premise is basically the common belief that all of your prospects have about their problem, industry, or something that does not need to be proven or reinforced. I like to think of it in terms of a joke. So thinking back to the legal example that I mentioned, the joke that they said was, hey, running a law firm would be great if it wasn't for the lawyers. Now, why is this important for positioning? It's important because it tells you something about pain. It tells you something about the general pain points that a person's feeling. In that law example, the problem that they were feeling is that the lawyers are frequently coming out of their, you know, office, and they're basically saying to the office manager, hey, where the heck's my paper gone? Like, why haven't I billed this client? Why haven't I heard from this person? And just in asking that question and getting a couple of answers from different parts of the organization, people on the call, you start to get a pretty good idea of like, what are the common tropes that you can play to in this industry? Someone else said in a different thing, you wouldn't believe the stuff that our customers get up to in the night when they're on the road. And then they gave me some stories. I can't share any of them, unfortunately, but they were a kind of a logistics tech company. And it was wild, man. But the stuff that they told us kind of gives insights into the problems that their customers feel. So that's the premise.
Can I ask you, so I'm going to be using UserList as an example. So one premise is like user onboarding is important. Okay, everybody knows that. And another, and when we also have statements that nobody says out loud, but we all know that it's true, is that you're always procrastinating when you set up your email automation and you like hate to do that, that kind of work that nobody cares to do. You do this like once in 3 years and never update it and it's horrible. And everybody says that do email marketing well, but they barely send like a drip onboarding sequence, like another sad truth. So do we want to go for something that's more marketable in the first division, or do we want to like shout out the truth?
You know, you need to get to the core of the matter. This isn't a public document. You're not going to share this document with anyone outside of the company.
Okay.
You want to get to the real heart of it, because ultimately, if you hire a copywriter to go off and write you messaging, that kind of insight is golden, right? So just even knowing that will enable a copywriter to go off and say, well, look, I can't say this publicly, but I know that everyone thinks this. How can I phrase it differently, right? That kind of stuff is really insightful and useful to have. So you should be
blunt. How about nobody in the world except for a few people can make sense of email automation ever? Like, seriously, well, we've learned it so hard.
Well, if it's commonly accepted, then
I don't know, but I think so. It's not said out loud because everybody's opening their automation tool and think they will do something, but seriously, it's not the part of the brain that works for most people, and it's not supposed to, sadly. No, I don't know why we went into this industry.
There you go. All right. Well, that's a problem for a different episode, Jane. But
okay. Sorry. Let's move on.
Okay. So difference chunking is next. Difference chunking is basically, how does your company get results differently to anyone else? Now, what happens here is surprising. So there are five ways that we think you differentiate. Strategy, that's basically how do you do your strategy differently? Like, how do you implement things differently? Structure, so how does your business being structured relate to how effective your product is for your customers? We can talk about these in a second. Systems, so how do the systems that you have allow you to create a better product or service that delivers on the promise being made to the customer? Shared values, actually, this one comes up a lot. Is what values do you share with your customers and how do they affect how you deliver your product? And then style, how does your unique style of delivering your products or solutions affect the customer and reaching their aha moments? Aha. Mm-hmm. So that in that section, we're looking for one, maybe two max of those five. We don't want one. We don't want something for everything. We want to know, like, what's the thing that you're doing differently? I'll give you an example here. So recently, I was working with a company who helped nonprofits, and one of the things that they realized that they do differently is they have shared values with their customers because their customers are from a specific geographical location, and have a very specific political worldview. And the company itself also shares that. And that relates to the way that they end up delivering this product. Now, that might not seem like a differentiator, but the reality is that it's a very big differentiator because the other companies in the market don't relate at all in the same way. They have no idea about the kind of the political views of their customers and how their their worldview might align to solving the problem specifically. So another kind of way that this often plays out is in systems or structure, which might, depending on the kind of business, it depends. This might kind of be expressed as, hey, we don't just sell the product, we help people implement it after. And then we continually check in with them. So obviously, many SaaS businesses will find that unattractive. The reality is the majority of fast-growing SaaS companies have a pretty aggressive kind of customer success program in place. And so that was a clear one, because most of the other companies in the industry sold the product and then went on to the next deal. So that's difference chunking.
Mm-hmm. Market intimacy, the next one.
Market intimacy is, how have you helped your customers mitigate their mistakes? So, or alternatively, what has your product helped them achieve that resulted in increased speed, certainty, or insight? So this one is usually a place to share some specific stories. And often this is kind of like where everything clicks into place, by the way. So like, for example, I've worked with one company who had a workflows feature, and what they did was they solved a communication problem, a gap in the kind of the cadence of communication for problem with that their customer ended up having, by helping them put into place workflows that automated some of the communication. Now, other companies weren't doing that. So they were literally saying, we've got these workflows. And then the end customer of the product was actually not ever implementing the thing, right? So they had the feature, but they didn't do anything with it. And so our client said, well, look, we actually helped them get this up and running. Therefore, we're like more like a partner than a vendor. And then suddenly this kind of clicks into place, because the positioning statement is about not about the technology itself, but it's about the way that the company uses the technology to relate to the pain points of the problem, of the customer. And that is unique and differentiated to everybody else in the market who sells a piece of technology. And ultimately, that's differentiated in a way which is meaningful, because nobody else can copy your relationships, right? People can copy features, people can copy pricing models, but they can't copy the way that you relate to your customers and the way that your customers trust you. Now, that is, in my opinion, that's a pretty strong differentiator. And ultimately, that's why their positioning statement, again, I can't quite share that, but it reflects that specific point. The positioning statement is what everyone thinks positioning is. It's really just the end product of all of the work that comes before that we've just talked about. And in my view, one of the reasons that that people fail in SaaS businesses to actually end up with a coherent positioning is because they're focused on copywriting. So frequently in our sessions with clients, I end up saying, look, I'm going to tell you this in advance. I don't want anyone to talk and say that word is wrong. We should try a different word right now. That's not the purpose of this. All we need to do in this session is align on, do we think this is the right direction in terms of positioning? Does this express the ideas, even if it's not a perfect expression, like linguistically, of how you'd want to put on your, what you'd want to put on your website homepage? Does this do a good job of explaining how you relate and solve the problem for your customers?
What do you do with the canvas once you fill it out? And one question I have, you've probably tried it with multiple clients. Do you seriously state that you've been able to accomplish the positioning? You've been able to resolve this in 90 minutes for all of them? Seriously? Is it like some kind of magic? What?
No. It's like it's a genuine process. It works. I think like part of it is to do with the fact that, look, we do a 90-minute session, but these people have been working in the business for years, some of them. They have like, I tell you what this is like. You ever read that book Blink by Malcolm Gladwell?
I haven't, but I've heard about it.
Well, for anyone who hasn't, the concept is basically the brain does all sorts of things and makes choices based on things that you maybe can't articulate all the time. An example is when you, I can't remember the specifics of this, but I always remember the example, like when you walk into a room and you meet someone for the first time, let's say they're wearing a suit, but they've got shoes with holes in them. Like, what's the thing you take away? Are they a smart person or are they a scruffy person? It's probably a scruffy person because of the shoes, right? You might not have looked specifically at their shoes, but you know that they've got holes in them. That's because your brain does things all the time, right? Same thing about people who work in a business for a while. And that's why we try to get different stakeholders from different parts of the business involved in this. They have been in that business day in, day out, talking to customers. Now, when I ask them questions about their customers, I get the bits that are like sticking out in their mind because over time they've been like, you know, they've been crushed like, oh gosh, I sound like a guy with like a million metaphors, but they've been kind of crushed like diamonds, you know? They've been compacted down from all the kind of dirt and stuff that just goes into the day-to-day of customer insights. And then the things that come out in this conversation are like the purest form of the customer's pain. And that's really what I want from these. And it's why this canvas ends up being so effective. It's because for 90 minutes, we focus on the best of the customer pain points with people from all over the business who have very different experience of the customers. At the end, you end up with like this kind of, you know, this perfect jewel of a positioning statement. But look, Jane, just to be totally real here, positioning is one thing. How you express that positioning is another thing. Like, are you going to get from 90 minutes, are you going to get a total website rehaul? Are you going to get all your ads rewritten? No, you're not, obviously. A large part of the work of demand gen, specifically at Powered by Search, is also like, okay, look, we've got this positioning canvas. How do we apply this positioning statement to our marketing? What does that look like? What terms do we target in search? What does this hero headline look like? What's the kind of the offer? Where is the customer? How do they find us? How should our ad copy be structured? All of this stuff is what comes later. And it's where the, unfortunately, where the magic really happens is actually on the implementation of this work. The session that we sit down and do together is really strategic and systematic because it gives us the insight that we need to go off and do the work. But I should say, anyone can do this. You don't need to hire Powered by Search to go off and do this for you. You can literally read that blog post, work through it with your team, and you'll have a positioning statement.
I kind of get where different elements of this go in terms of like mapping them to certain landing page sections. I can envision that. But I do have a question about the promise and the premise. Like, how do these get translated into the copy or materials?
Well, look, you mentioned Basecamp earlier. The premise, I don't know, for Basecamp must have been, it doesn't have to be crazy at work.
Uh-huh.
Where does that come through in their brand? It's literally the title of one of their books. It's their positioning. It doesn't have to be crazy at work.
Is it the premise or the promise?
Well, that's a premise, right? Because most people would say, oh my gosh, work is so crazy right now.
Okay, so we use the premise as an anti-sentiment.
Yeah, basically. So, and that's why I say you might not be able to say it out loud, but you can have a copywriter come in and go, how do we say this without saying it? Right. So in that position, in that particular instance, you know, it was easy to say because you just had to switch it around. But that's why having a good copywriter to write your actual copy that goes out to the public is so useful. The promise basically helps you understand why your competitors are so bland. So the worst thing that happens is when people chicken out. So, sometimes you'll see someone who can express their positioning really well, and then in their messaging, they end up totally missing the positioning because they go, well, our competitors say they're an all-in-one solution. Won't our customer want to buy that? My experience is no. And you shouldn't try and copy your customer, your competitors. Like, once you've got feature parity or you nail your customer pain point so well that you don't need feature parity at all, you should go your own way and do your own thing because your customer has told you that they buy your product because X, Y, and Z, right? Because you're positioned this way. That's how you should view the world.
This is both inspiring and scary at the same time to narrow down, you know.
Why is it scary?
I will lead by example. UserList has a feature. We call this company accounts or team accounts. Basically, all email software thinks in terms of individual users. And we allow SaaS founders to manage accounts, to onboard accounts. And it's not all of our customers who use it, but those who do like rave about it because we are virtually the only software that does it well. Well, nobody else does it at all. It's just barely Intercom who can. So, and one of the things, like this little worms in my brain, our brains, is shall we like abandon everything and go like account based email for SaaS? Period. That's like the selling point. And should we, or should we stick to the remaining market and just be an email marketing tool and keep this as a primary feature? That's the question. Shall we go all in or shall we just, you know, name the features?
It's so interesting. I mean, I think at that point, what you have to be able to do is you have to be able to go back to the stuff that we mentioned at the top of the call. Mm-hmm. What's your market look like? How much of this market do we have left to meet? If we went for account-based marketing, did you say? Or account-based email?
Yeah, there are different terms for this.
Account-based email for SaaS companies. What would our business look like if we grew to, you know, 10, 20% of the market share versus what would it look like if we grew to 5% of the, you know, potentially broader market? And then you make a choice based on that. What I will say here as well, Jane, is like, we call it a beachhead market. Are you familiar with that term?
No, I'm pretty fascinated now, though.
So beachhead market is, I'm pretty sure this is related to, and this is, I don't do this often, but military strategy. So if you want to invade a country by sea and you want to land on the beach, that's every country, you know, obviously a coastal country has a beach. You choose one beach, or if you've got a big enough army, you choose a couple of beaches. You conquer that beach. And then you expand to the next beach. You don't go for the whole coastline because ultimately there are people who are better equipped there to, you know, kill your side than you are to capture theirs. The same thing works in marketplaces. Let's say you started out you determined that this was a good enough market that you could build a solid business in just by focusing on that one thing. You would go, okay, how do I solve this problem and communicate it clearly, positioning myself around that specific pain that you're solving for that, you know, clearly that raving market you said. How do we focus on that? We're going to do that for however long it takes to grow to the size that we think we can. Then we're going to add something adjacent to that. And we're going to change our positioning, but only slightly. That is how you can think about positioning when you have a specific thing that you are trying to address that maybe your competitors are not. Potentially, you're cutting out some of your market, but is it enough for you to build a business that you're proud of and that works for your goals with just that customer base? That's a question for you to answer more than me, but that's the way to think about it is you can reposition your company at any time based on additional features, changing business goals, changing customers, and changing needs, frankly. Like if, let's say, your positioning doesn't work, you might want to think, okay, is our positioning the problem here? So that's how you can kind of think about this. You might not decide to go for the very specific, we're only account-based email for SaaS companies. You might say, we do lifecycle email for SaaS companies, mm-hmm. A slightly broader version of that. That's That's how I would think about it, though.
You answered one of the hardest questions I had in line for you, which is like, how do we organize our positioning efforts over time? Because it's natural that nothing is set in stone. So it's okay to pivot, and you can use this strategy with the beach. How do you call it again?
The beachhead market. I don't know why it's called beachhead specifically, but yeah, I don't know.
Make a note there. That's amazing. We need to wrap up today's episode. This has been a super helpful conversation. Where can people find more of what you do and read more on positioning?
Sure. So for Powered by Search, you go to poweredbysearch.com and just check out our blog. We publish all of our frameworks. Literally, if you studied it, you could learn how we do most of the things that we do and go and do it yourself. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm extremely active. That's I am Mark Thomas. That's Mark with a C. And yeah,
I forgot to ask you a closing question, which is one do and one don't when it comes to SaaS positioning.
Okay, I'll start with one do. Choose something that is truly differentiated from your competitors. One don't is don't just leave your positioning statement in a document. Make sure that it goes into every project that you start. Is this aligned to our positioning, or are we moving away from it? That's my don't.
Amazing. But I love both. Thanks so much, Mark, and have a wonderful rest of your week.
You too. Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening. If you found the episode useful, please spread the word about this new show on Twitter, mentioning UserList, or leave us a review on iTunes.